We're going to take an overview of this handout first before we dig into the nitty-gritty. Roman numeral 1 says, looking over the whole reading task. Now, if you're new to reading, perhaps you're the one who will have the greatest problem with this, because perhaps you have a little bit of a myopic view about what reading instruction is. I know that I did. I thought reading instruction is phonics, and if I just can understand all that stuff that's called phonics, I'll be all set. But if you'll see that when we look over the whole reading task, and we're going to spend quite a bit of time on this, that teaching reading is involved a lot more than phonics. We're going to look at word recognition, that's from letter A. We're going to look at comprehension. Then over the next page, reading instruction also involves teaching students about oral and silent reading, also learning reading study skills. So that's the first part, looking at the whole reading task so that we can have a balance in the teaching of reading. Secondly, planning the reading instruction time. All right, once you've stood back and looked at the whole reading task, then how do you narrow this down to the reading instruction time that you have? If you're in a traditional classroom with reading groups, if you're working in a multi-grade, if you're at home, a one-on-one, how do you go about planning the reading instruction time? And then, thirdly, how do you select the reading instruction tools? Now, we do not have, at this New Beginnings program, a publisher's workshop for reading. I will take this number 3 and make this into a very brief, not only because it's on the end, but because I want to spend most of the time just talking about teaching reading in general and not make this a commercial. But I will be talking about how you select a reading instruction tool. I work at the press, and I have been working there for the last 5 years, working with some very talented teachers, actual classroom teachers, in the development of our English books, grades 2 through 6. And so I was not involved in the writing of the reading program, but I still am a little bit subjective about it because I think it's great. So I will tell you a little bit about the reading program, then at the end, I'll try to save time for questions, and I will stay here until 5 or 5:15 to talk with any of you that might have additional questions. Okay, let's go back and let's do this looking over the whole reading task. As you teach reading, you're going to find that there are 4 basic skills to be taught, and we've talked about these 4 basic skills. The one that comes to mind most readily and the first one that we deal with is word recognition. But you'll notice that word recognition involves a lot of sub-skills. Word recognition involves context analysis. Now, many of us as adult readers learn new words, new reading words, by context analysis. But what I mean by context analysis is you look at the sentence, you see a word that perhaps you don't recognize at first glance, but then as you read the whole sentence, you see, oh, of course, the word stirrup fits in here. Now, I doubt, unless you're a real city slicker, that you had not come across the word stirrup. But if we take it down to a child's level, he's perhaps heard the word stirrup. He's seen a picture of a horse with a stirrup, but he's never run into it in his reading. But as he reads along, he reads a sentence that goes something like, the boy headed for the horse, his eyes glued to the saddle. He jumped, put his foot into the, and swung his other leg over. All right, the child may never have seen the word stirrup, but he sees it because of the context. He knows, and he makes an educated guess. That is a rather sophisticated step in word recognition, but that is one of the ways that we learn to recognize words by context analysis. by the meaning context, also by word order, the order in which words appear. In our English language, we usually have subject, verb, object. We have our prepositional phrases in there. So we sometimes are able to recognize a word by its order in the sentence, as well as by the context, the content clues. The second one is the one that I mentioned for first, is phonics for decoding. That is another word recognition skill. Now, what is phonics? The study of linguistics involves, very simply, the study of graphemes, which is a representation of sound, the study of phonemes, and the study of morphemes. Apply this to reading. We take a study of graphemes, which is the representation of sounds, the letters, in other words, the phonemes, the basic sounds, and we teach children the connection between those two. We use this for reading instruction. We teach phonics for decoding. Now, there's a difference between decoding and encoding. Decoding is recognizing a word that's already printed, figuring it out, being able to say it. Encoding, the flip of the coin, is the spelling of a word. Phonics is important. The teaching of phonics is important, especially in beginning reading and spelling. As a child begins to decode in his reading and to encode in his spelling. Now, there are two principles that I think you ought to keep in mind as you teach reading. The first is that whatever phonics instruction you give, it's vital that you link that phonics instruction to comprehension. Secondly, you need to keep in mind that the reader, the child that you're teaching to read, must know the letter sound association in connection with its environment. Now, I'll go back over that. The reader, the child needs to learn the letter sound association in the environment that he sees it. Okay, for example, short vowels are usually found in closed syllables. The words set, meant, get, let. That's the short E sound. When the child begins to see that that short E sound is reliably found in closed syllables, that's an important step. So he needs to see not only the F, but he needs to see where that is an F. Okay, what about the word gate, the long A sound? The child sees the short A sound in that closed syllable. When he sees gate, he sees that A in its environment. It makes a long sound because of the marker E. But you see, he sees it in the environment, not just isolated. Okay, so that principle that a child needs to see the grapheme or the letter and the phoneme or the sound relationship within the context, within the environment of a word or a syllable. And then back to the first one, all phonics instruction should be linked to comprehension. Now, if we say that these are important principles, and they are vital principles, then what are we going, how is that going to affect our reading instruction? We're going to isolate the sound, when we teach phonics, we're going to isolate the sound long enough, only long enough for the child to recognize it. The F sound. This is the letter E. It sometimes says F. Sometimes makes an F sound. Then immediately, we're going to put it into its environment when it does make a short E sound. In net, let, get, bet, set. And we're going to, you see, we're putting the sound right into a word. So we're linking, we're getting that comprehension right in there. Immediately, the child is seeing, okay, that's a word that I understand. Now that may sound very simple, but many people have all kinds of trouble with their reading instruction because they try to isolate. They try to isolate those sounds and not connect them to the environment and not connect them to the comprehension, to the actual word. Okay, structural analysis. It's another way we recognize words. We divide words into syllables. We teach children about suffixes and prefixes. We teach the child, as he learns multi-syllable words, to divide the word into syllables. He's learned these phonics rules, these phonics reliable generalizations, and now he finds these reliable generalizations within the syllable of a word. So we teach the child how to recognize words by structural analysis. You've worked with compound words. As soon as you teach a compound word, you're using structural analysis. You're breaking the compound word into its two parts. And a child, oh, I understand that. Rain, coat. Rain and coat, those words put together make a word. Dictionary analysis. Now, dictionary analysis is the working access to word information in the dictionary or a glossary. And that's what we're aiming for. We're aiming for a child who is able to get information from a dictionary independently. And then sight word recognition. Now, sight words, sometimes the word, the label sight words is a naughty label. But many of the words that children learn they learn by sight. Those of you who have children at home know that your children learn many of their words from the cereal boxes. They learn the stop from the stop sign. These are sight words. They learn the word the. You see, the word the is an irregular word. It doesn't follow a loyal spelling generalization, a phonetic analysis. So the child learns the word the by sight. Children, adults learn many, many words by sight, especially those words that cannot be figured out or decoded according to phonics instruction. So as you start teaching word recognition, your program that you use, your approach has to include all of these. Now, not all on one grade level, of course. As you work with a K-5 child, you're not going to send it to the dictionary. But what you're looking, your long-term goal is that you're going to develop word recognition. You're working toward the long term so that he will eventually learn enough about the structural analysis of a word that he can go to the dictionary. He'll teach him diacriticals so that he can go to the dictionary. So all of these are parts of word recognition, teaching of word recognition. Okay, what else do you teach when you teach reading? It goes beyond that, beyond a child recognizing a word and being able to stand up there and say the words. Although this word recognition is important and reading can go anywhere if we don't have word recognition, once the child learns to recognize words, once the child has a reading vocabulary, and while the child is getting a reading vocabulary, the most important thing, especially for the Christian, is that you teach your child, your own child or the children that the Lord has entrusted to you in your school to comprehend, to understand. And so teaching comprehension is a vital part of teaching reading. Part of comprehension, of course, is vocabulary. You want to spend time teaching vocabulary to your students, the vocabulary from the stories he's going to read before he reads them, presenting what we would call stopping vocabulary to the child, words that he might not be familiar with as far as the understanding is concerned. So you'll spend time, part of comprehension is developing a child's vocabulary. Part of comprehension is developing the sentence sense. Some of the earliest writers of language arts for children said that if a child by the end of sixth grade learned only sentence sense, then a teacher would be a successful teacher. Now that may be oversimplifying it a little bit, but a child needs to realize this thing, this group of words that I've just heard, this group of words that I've just read, is a complete sentence, it's a complete thought. He needs to develop an ear for that through the oral reading that he does. He needs to look at the visual clues, the capitalization, the end punctuation. He needs to know that when he sees a question mark, that sentence is asking the question. When he sees an exclamation mark, that's another indication of a sentence, of the completion of a thought, and that means excitement or enthusiasm. And then, can't neglect teaching all levels of comprehension. If you've taught before, how many of you are seasoned teachers? You've been teaching for 2 years or more. Okay. And the rest of you, I'll think, are 1 year or below that, or an administrator perhaps who's not teaching. Okay, levels of comprehension. The easiest level of comprehension to teach to children, I know when my husband and I had our first daughter, we read Bible stories to her, we had devotions. I know these were the kinds of questions we asked. They were the literal questions. How many spies were there? Those very obvious questions that were answered right in the story. But we have to go beyond that literal comprehension. We have to teach the child how to interpret what he's read. We have to teach him how to be critical of what he's read. I'm sure a number of you have come across adults, not just children, but adults who believe if something is printed in the Reader's Digest, it has to be true. Or if it's on the front page of the newspaper, that's automatic certification that it's true. A pitiful situation, and we have a direct responsibility from the Lord, I'm convinced, to teach children to be critical readers. To understand that reading something does not mean that something is true. And we begin, even while we're teaching word recognition, we're teaching these levels of comprehension also. I'm going to give you a little definition of comprehension. Comprehension is the mind asking questions and getting answers. It's a mental process. The mind asking questions and getting answers. And then, of course, is the appreciative. We want to be training young people who not only can read, but who love to read and who do read. And a child who is taught this level of comprehension, being able to make a connection. Oh, I understand. I've been reading, I'll put in an advertisement for Jerry since she's back there. I've been reading a book that she wrote not too long ago called Durwood Incorporated. It's part of our reading program. It's the reader for grade 5. And it is so funny. And I think what makes it so funny is that I identify the two main characters so far are a brother and a sister. And this brother is constantly tormenting his sister, just giving her all kinds of grief. And some of the things that he does are things that I remember my brothers doing to me. And it makes it so funny. You see, that is what I am doing is I'm relating to the author, and I'm making a connection. And I'm saying, oh, I know just how she felt, because I felt that way too. That is something that a child learns. That you do make a connection. Things that you understand, things that you've experienced, help you to appreciate what the author has said and help you to make a connection and help you to really to enjoy reading. So you're not reading just words. You're appreciating what's read. Now, there's a little chart here that shows where I get these terms taken from a group of taxonomies, Bloom, Sanders, and Barrett. And I'm using the terms on the left, those levels of comprehension. Involved also in the teaching, the task of teaching reading is oral and silent reading. Teaching oral and silent reading. You might say you teach oral and silent reading. Don't the kids just sit there and read silently and don't they just stand up and read orally? No, there's some teaching that's involved in that too. Oral reading, if we go back to some of the guidelines for teaching phonics, we said, don't teach phonics unlinked to comprehension. We can say the same thing. Don't give oral reading or silent reading for that matter, unlinked, unconnected to comprehension. Let me explain how you might do that. The children are getting ready to do some silent reading. You're assigning, say in the second grade, you're assigning a page. And you're going to teach them how to really read silently. So you say, all right, I'm going to read page 109. I want you to find out how many sheep came when the shepherd called. All right, so the child then has in his little mind this goal that he has as he does his silent reading. Now, a simple questioning like that directs the child's mind. All of us have done this. We've read silently a page or a paragraph, stopped, and then asked ourselves, what did I just read? Go back over it. We have trouble with college students who do that. Even college students who read orally are so busy sounding out the words and getting the punctuation correct that they don't know what they've read. So you're teaching how a child understands when he's reading silently. In oral reading, you might say, rather than this round robin reading of, all right, Johnny, you read the first two sentences, and Susie, you be ready on that third sentence. Now come, because when the third sentence comes, Johnny's going to stop and you're going to read. You see, what we're doing there is we're encouraging the children just to decode. We're not encouraging any kind of comprehension. So, to teach comprehension, to teach good, intelligent oral reading, you might say, after some silent reading, I'd like you to find a section that tells what the shepherd said when he called the sheep. Then read that for me. So the child finds the section, reads the section, you're giving him his oral reading, but you see you've linked it to comprehension. Then you might say, taking it a step further, good, that's the section, that's exactly the right section. Now how about reading it as you think the shepherd sounded when he said that? We all know that inflection, intonation, stress, pitch, all of these things are involved with comprehension. A child understands a selection if he is able to read the direct words of someone in the way that someone would read it. If the person is excited or nervous or frightened, the child has grasped that from his reading and he's going to read it that way. So that's another part. And I hope your minds are clicking along. And I'm sure some of you are already doing this. So this is just, you know, just a repetition and saying, oh, okay, I do that all along. But this is nothing new to me. But if it is new to you, you know, start thinking, okay, do I do that? Can I do that? And this is not for the reading time alone, although that's what we're focusing on right now. And then the last part of comprehension, the reading study skills. We haven't really taught children to read unless we've taught them how to have information locating skills, using the dictionary, using the encyclopedia, maps, graphs, charts, atlases. So we need to be sure that our reading instruction involves that. Also, information reading skills. You know that you read, I imagine you read an encyclopedia article if you're looking for some particular information. Our daughter went to Australia this summer, and I found myself on my break grabbing the A section of the encyclopedia and thinking, let's see, do they drive on the left side of the street? Oh no, the child's going to have a toe wreck if they drive on the left side of the street. So I'm flipping through. Now, I'm not reading the whole article, but I'm scanning the encyclopedia article for something about driving. I'm not going to start at the beginning where it tells the population of Australia and the type of government and the capital. I'm flipping because I'm looking for specific information. Now, children have to be taught to do that. They have to be taught to scan. They have to be taught to skim. That is a skill for finding information. We read differently when we're looking for information than we do when we're reading for pleasure. Okay, what about organizational skills? Part of the reading task is teaching students to notice sequence. First, then, later, next, finally. Finding topic sentences. Those of you who are good readers and who read a lot, perhaps doing research, if you're doing writing articles, know that if you can find the topic sentence of a paragraph, you can probably just skim down the rest of that paragraph until you get to a paragraph perhaps that has the specific information that you have to read. You're finding topic sentences, looking for supporting details. So we need to teach, part of teaching reading is that, teaching organizational skills. Okay, so that's the overall thing. Those are the four big areas in which we teach reading. Now, how do you plan the reading instruction time? Now, the reading instruction takes a lot more time than just the little reading group. You're getting together, having a whole class together, doing teaching reading, and then getting into the groups, working with them in groups. It also involves reading in the content area, and that's included in the last part of this. But you should take time to focus on the skills. First of all, temporarily isolating a skill. Because you see, when you're teaching a child to read, you're not teaching him merely to go through a selection, 2-3-4-page selection. You're also teaching the skill connected with that lesson. No matter what program you're working with, you are teaching the skill at the same time that the child is doing some reading. So you temporarily isolate the skill. Now, what you're doing if you're working in a classroom, I realize I'm talking to all different groups, so I'm trying to spread myself a little bit thin here, but as you introduce a skill to a child, say you're working with a silent GH in word, and you're teaching light and night and fight and might. So you're going to temporarily isolate the skill, that I with the silent GH in the context, in the one syllable word, the sound that the I makes, that the GH are silent. You're going to have to be extremely energetic because you're going to be trying to get the student's attention and teach them inductively. And inductive teaching takes a lot of hard work because the child knows the word light and night and might and fight. At least he knows how to say it. So you're going to start with what he knows direct his thinking so that you eventually bring him to the place where, given a group of those words or given those words in a sentence, he's going to recognize them. And that's perhaps the skill that you're focusing on as you get ready to read this selection. You want to provide for some type of independent follow-up. Now, most reading programs have work tests, and that is the independent follow-up. So your skill is going to be introduced in the group time, energetically getting all the students involved in it, working with a family of words, perhaps, that has that skill that you're teaching, and then you're going to provide some independent follow-up for the students, probably in a work text. In a work text page, so that the child again gets to go over the skill that you've been talking about in a group. And then some type of interesting review.
I'm sorry. I've not been wired for sound all this time. You homeschool people have an ideal situation. I hate to put the traditional classroom teachers down, but the homeschool mother, father has an ideal situation for interesting review. You can go right into the kitchen and out into the yard immediately with that one-on-one. But the classroom teacher can come up with all kinds of interesting review if her program doesn't have review, or even in addition to the review that her program has. And then you want to immediately tie that skill to reading. Now, you've done it if you've isolated that sound, for example, the long I sound with the silent GH. If you've isolated it and then put it into words, into whole words, you want to continue giving whole word practice. Perhaps you would take the IGHT, write it up on the board, and then ask the children how many other letters they can put in front of that to make different words. The blend flight, night, blight. And they would go on like that into whole word practice. And then relate the skills to the lesson content. Now, a reading program will probably do that. That I'm referring to a story about the lost sheep. And the follow-up would probably deal with sheep and with the same topic. So you're sticking in your review and your skill review and your phonics review, or if it's a study skill review, you're sticking with the content of what the reader story is going to be about to do your review, so that the child's mind is clicking all along. He's on the same channel all along. He's working with sheep. He's talking about sheep. He's talking about the good shepherd. And so his skill, ideally, the review he does, the drill he does, the practice he does, and the skill is going to be connected with sheep. You might have little sheep cutouts. You might play a game in which you work with wool, pieces of wool or something like that, or wool fabric. But you're going to want to tie together what the story and the skill work that you're doing. And then a time for directed teaching, establishing the connection between the reader and the writer. It's vitally important before you put a child into a reading selection to give him some background concepts. I'm sure you realize that the more you know before you read, the more you learn when you read. So you would want to do some type of activity, or at least some type of discussion with the child, if he is going to read a story that he has little background on. Teachers who work in inner cities find it very difficult to have their children reading a lot of stories about the farm or about the country, because the children they're teaching have no earthly idea. And so a teacher is going to have to either give the child a lot of background information, or she's going to have to take the children on a field trip before she does that, before they're really going to get much out of the reader story that they have. And then introducing stopping vocabulary. I mentioned that these might be sight words, or they might be words that the child has not run across because of their meaning. And then establishing a purpose for reading. Here's where that comprehension comes in. So after you've introduced the skill and you're getting ready to put the child into the reader to read the reader's story, you're going to give him some background, you're going to introduce stopping vocabulary, and then establish a purpose for reading. Why is he reading this selection? Other than to read the first page and to be the first one to put his hand up. Is he getting some material that he understands from it? Okay, besides establishing the connection, you want to develop silent reading comprehension with good questioning. Now, I alluded to these questions. Here's a further explanation of those four types of questions. As I said, usually if you are using a reading program that doesn't have questions, then you're probably going to make up literal questions because they are the easiest to make up. But you need interpretive questions, critical questions, and appreciative questions to really do a good job of teaching that comprehension, of letting the child's mind ask questions and get answers. And then keeping oral reading tied to comprehension. All right, your students have done silent reading. You've given them a question before they do their silent reading. You've discussed the answers to the question. You're leading then right into oral reading. So your oral reading doesn't have to involve, in a reading group, every child's reading aloud the whole selection. You're really spending so much time on that without doing anything more than checking a child's decoding. And you can check a child's decoding by the spot selection of pieces that he has found because he understands what he's read, and then doing that reading. Now, there may be time for, in a short passage, for the child to do oral reading, especially in the early grades. You will want to do more oral reading. But as you go up in the grades, if you've started out teaching first grade and you've moved up, as many teachers in Christian schools do now, to fourth grade, don't feel tied to having all your children read aloud every single day. You're not backsliding if you don't do that. Okay, and I've already said selections read to answer questions, dialogues read like conversation, comments about the content throughout oral reading. So say you are having a time when all the students are reading orally. You are going around, you've set that time aside maybe once in this particular week where you're going to have every child read orally. Be sure that you stop and comment on the content to bring that child's mind back to what he's reading so he's not focusing on the decoding exclusively. Okay, you need to also set a time for teaching reading in the content areas. And this is where I said teaching reading does not involve just the little reading circle time or the reading instruction time. It's teaching reading in the content areas. Just as you bridge the gap between the reader and the writer with your little reader stories, in the reading that a child does for science, the reading that he does for heritage studies, you're still teaching reading. Take the time to bridge the gap between the textbook and the reader. Give some background information. Show the child a beaker. Talk about what it's used for. Then when he reads this long section on using a beaker, he at least has handled it, knows it's made of glass, knows what it looks like. That's a simple thing, and many of you just may do it out of habit. But that is important in all the subject areas, all the content areas. And using questioning techniques that make a difference. Think of questions other than literal questions for your heritage studies. Can you see how the people's disobedience resulted in their being punished? How about if you read this section and see if you can find an example about the people's disobedience resulting in their being punished, seeing God's hand in history, making connections there. Now, that may not, the book that you're reading may not say God punished the people for their disobedience, but the child can infer that. And he can see how that did happen because he's used to thinking and making connections beyond just the literal that he's getting. All right, and then properly guided oral reading, same type of thing. If your students are going to read orally in the content areas, have them find a selection that is worth reading aloud, that answers a question, that might precipitate some discussion. And then teaching study strategies. Teach the child how to read a math story problem. Perhaps some of your students, as I know in the past, mine had a problem with story problems because they really didn't know how to read them. They read a math story problem the same way they read a story. And they got to the end and didn't have any earthly idea of what they were to do. And it dawned on me that I had to teach them. It should have dawned on me much sooner. I realized I had to teach them how to read a story problem and how to be looking for the number of students, the money that they had, what they had to buy, so that I didn't have to have my students read that problem over and over and over again because they knew this is a story problem. I'm looking for figures. I'm looking for people. I'm looking for numbers. So teach study strategies in the areas. In your heritage studies, your children need to be taught how to read graphs and charts and maps. And if ideally you've been teaching that in your reading program also, and so you can make that correlation, but don't take for granted that they're working on it in reading means that they have it for heritage studies, because it sometimes takes the child a little while to realize those things I learned in reading I'm carrying over into heritage studies. Those things I learned in reading I'm carrying over into math. And they have to be taught. And then you need to set aside a time for recreational and reinforcement reading. Now, direct motivation, if contests for quantity. The long handout I gave you is just a sample contest. And I've put up on the back bulletin board there a mini version of that bulletin board that's given for you along with the explanation of the reading. I talked with a teacher who had used that, and I said, did you have any parents a little bit upset because they thought you were being materialistic? And she said, no, but she said, I did connect it with a unit on money in math. And that seemed to take the materialism out of it. But what these students did, as you can read, was they read pages. They were awarded certain amounts of paper money for pages that they read. They each had a bank, although I had just a few banks. Each child's name was on his own bank. And at the end of the day, he deposited into his bank the amount of money that his pages read translated into. We had the one team, this happened to be the bulletin board that I got from the teacher, was first grade federal. The whatever team at the end of the day was ahead, the banker got to hold the money bag. And she said it was really exciting because at the end of the day, the kids wanted to see. They just waited with all kinds of excitement while she totaled up the cash earned in reading that day and made a big dramatic display of putting the money bag in the banker's hands. And she said they also used the money in math time. They sat down and took their nickels and dimes and quarters and pennies and their dollars. The banks are made so you can shake the money out, and they could take four quarters and take that out and put a dollar bill in. So you want to have contests. And then, of course, book reports for quality. Now, most of your children, maybe your children hear book reports. I'd rather die, rather not read than do a book report. But And we'll talk more about this in composition, but you can come up with all kinds of book reporting ideas. Making a poster, making a mobile, a story cube in which the child draws pictures of different parts of the story and pastes them on a cube. Writing a letter to the author. We've had some interesting times with that because we have a number of authors at the press. Students writing to the author. That really requires some pretty good comprehension. You would, of course, set up a restructured letter, tell the child that it would be appropriate for him to thank the author for writing the book, tell what part he or she enjoyed most, to ask a question, perhaps. Where did you get the idea for the mattress factory in Durwood Incorporated? Where'd you get someone's name? Did you know someone named? Is that why you named a person that a character that certain name? Writing to the author. Of course, before you do that, you want to check that the author is alive. The child will be very disappointed. Most authors, not just our authors, but most authors will respond. You see, that's their audience, their paying audience out there. And most children's authors do respond. Interview characters, sort of an imaginative typing, a type of activity. Do a diorama for those kids who are a little more creative artistically. Personify an object. I walked by a classroom last year, fourth grade, and I saw a boy up there with a comb in his hand. And the other kids were sitting on the edge of their seats, and they had these big grins on their faces, and he was having the best time, and I couldn't hear what was going on. I could just see. And I looked, and they had their English book out, and they were working on the idea of personifying an object in the story. They were so excited, and these fourth graders, the teacher told me, after that, she could hardly keep them in their seats. Oral work suddenly became fun. And she said every book they read for about 3 weeks after that, they were looking for objects to personify. I think it was Ben Franklin and me, one of them personified a cap. We give some suggestions in that book, but you might want to try that. So that's an oral time. The child doesn't really have to write anything down. Doesn't have to. Book reports don't have to be written in order to be book reports. And then indirect motivation, attitudes. They see the teacher reading. You come in and tell about something that you've been reading. Read a selection of something that you've been reading. If children see that you are reading in the home also, if studies have shown down through the years that children of parents who read are most likely to become readers. They see it in their home, their parents love it. And then the right atmosphere. One of our writers over at the press found this painting. It's a watercolor. Sorry, I don't have it in color. It's called Story Time. But we were talking about reading, and I said, the experience that I have had in the classroom of reading to children seems to bring out some important points about reading, and this painting seems to illustrate them. Children up through sixth grade, even in high school, love to be read to. It's amazing how you can quiet down a group of children by reading to them. In the lower grades, to bring about this type of atmosphere, you might want to have, I've been in a number of classrooms where they have reading corners, complete couch, beanbag pillows, cushions, bookshelves, lots of reading material, a rug where the kids can sit on the floor and read. I can remember teaching in a fourth grade classroom. I was doing permanent subbing there. There was a couch, and so I would usually sit in the middle of the couch, and the kids would fight to sit next to me. And it occurred to me that that's another thing about a good reading atmosphere. Even in fourth grade, even the boys wanted to be close. Some of them, I realized, had never been read to before. And I can remember one boy, one of the toughies of the class, and this was in a public school. I was reading, and before I knew it, he was holding onto my arm. He was right up there, and he couldn't get close enough to see the book, so he was holding onto my arm, and when he realized at the end of the story time that he was doing that, he just went like that. But there was a real rapport there. So the closeness that's involved in the teacher reading, the warmth, the enjoyment. Mrs. Joss, one of our writers over at the press, took a book that was in the process of being written over and read it each day to the sixth graders. They almost physically prevented her from leaving the classroom a couple of times. They were so excited. They looked forward to that. So that indirect motivation of establishing an exciting, warm, loving attitude about reading is very, very important, and that atmosphere is important. Now, in selecting the reading instruction tools, I'm going to go fast, and those of you who are sitting near these handouts, if you would pass these out, I've kept this for the last because, as I said, this is not a publisher's workshop, but all of the things that I've been talking about in structuring the reading lesson, if you were following with me, you can, at your leisure, or I know you probably will do it now, but this is a sample from our teacher manual, our student book, and our work text to show you all of those things that I talked about, teaching a skill, isolating a sound, putting it into words, samples of literal questions and interpretative questions. So what I've done is just lifted out of our materials a sample reading lesson. This happens to be grade 2. And it's the little lost lamb that I talked to you about. This is so if you were teaching a lesson from our program, the very first part of that reading handout is the pages from the teacher's edition. You would have a teacher's edition. Each child would have the reader, the 2-1 reader, and the reading work text. So you can see there are 2 pages from the Little Lost Lamb that would be included in this. Then there are 3 pages from the work text that show you the correlation from the story to the study skill in the work text page. And then all of the instruction, the phonics generalizations, everything you would need to know for teaching phonics, for teaching comprehension, what questions to ask, even down to where would be a good place to bring in a Bible action truth, are included in the teacher manual. Another thing in one of our support materials, I'm on the back page, one of our support materials, but you could do this with any program that you use. As I said, my purpose is not, I'm really treading lightly, is not to sell in this workshop our materials, but we have for at the end of every grade level, starting with grade 2, there's a novel. You might have to help me, Jerry. Grade 2 is The Courage of Sarah Noble. Grade 1, thank you. Grade 2 is These Are My Wings of the Eagles. Grade 3 is These Are My People. Grade 4 is Medallion. I happened to grab this off the table. Grade 5 is Durwood Incorporated. And what will grade 6 be?
It's going to be a historical novel.
Okay, a historical novel. We happen to have these as support materials so that your upper reading group, if you're teaching in a traditional school, your child for summer reading or whenever he finishes the prescribed lessons, can then read a novel. And in the teacher's manual for each grade level, we have the same type of thing that we've been talking about in the regularly, we have reading lessons for each novel, with literal, critical, interpretive, appreciative questions, all kinds of activities to guide you through the novel. We also have a packet of four novels that has just come out. You might want to ask at the table upstairs about that for extra reading material. But whatever program you're teaching, you want to go beyond your reader. By reader, I mean your book, your reading text, and get some good reading. You might want to check to get a reading list divided into grade levels so that you can go beyond the material you have. Anthologies, poet. We happen to sell Ferris, but perhaps you have, even from your own childhood, a good poetry anthology. So when you select materials, you're going to want to select that, and I'm working from the bottom up. I'm going to just let you go ahead and read this other in selecting the reading instruction tools. We feel that our program has all of these, the authority, the content, the readability, the craftsmanship, and the support materials. That's why we think it's really good. But I'll stop there and see if I've gone rapidly and I've covered a lot of ground. If you have a question that you think would be appropriate for the whole group, if you have questions that, you know, like my child is this, perhaps that would be better asked afterwards. But that's okay.
I brought the report card. Mm-hmm. And my problem was coming up with these grades for reading, like grasp, bind, generalization, applies appropriate word tax skills, comprehension was good. And I found it very difficult to grade. Put on those, not really grade, but F and N.
Uh-huh.
I found it hard to score the word tax to come up with a grade for that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any? What grade level are you working with? Okay. Grading something like reading is very, very difficult. You can use your work text pages for part of your grade. Much of it will have to be your own subjective grading. Now, you will have had lots of exposure to your child. You will have him in a reading group. You will be able to see his improvement, his progress or lack of progress, but there really are no easy answers to reading, but you would want to be keeping a separate chart for each child, seeing how his oral reading, how his decoding is coming along, making.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and a lot of that is caused by how the child feels. So it's extremely difficult. Your work text is going to help you. And the time that you spend, now of course the fewer students you have, the easier that will be because you can spend time with them evaluating their reading. But because you're asking these comprehension questions and you're working with the comprehension questions, you will have a pretty good idea of how that child is answering literal, the different types of questions. And you may have to keep a little graph as far as his decoding is concerned, whether he's up or down. Okay, another question.
How much the oral
is? I would try at the beginning. What grade are you working with, right? Second grade, okay. Mm-hmm. I would spend more time on the oral reading with her. Probably 75% to 25% on the silent, and then I would start to, you know, chop it back, because by the time the child gets up into fourth and fifth grade, more time will be spent probably on the silent reading, because you will by that time know how well that child is decoding. If you find that your child's oral reading is bad, if he's sounding out words letter by letter, then probably you have not done as well as you want to do on the phonics instructions. He's looking at the letter individually rather than the letters in a unit. And so perhaps rather than having him do more oral reading, you're going to want to go back and do more whole word work with the child. And you'll see that carrying over in his reading, in the oral reading. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how large a group are you speaking about? Are you saying the majority of the class would be in this group?
I would say if you're the majority, your top students, they can, you know, do this, they can enjoy it, distinctly. But you would have probably, at least in our experience in our school, at least six possibly in a class that are broader. They're not, you know, they're able to struggle along. But as far as recreational reading, it should probably be way lower than 10%. You almost have to have a vocabulary, you know, do almost every other word in the vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no time really to improve.
Right. Do you have access to an aide or a mother? Okay.
Well, we did try putting them with each other. Reading out loud, you know, give them a day where they just, you know, of course, a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But that was very embarrassing because the same kids wouldn't really participate. It was maybe the worst.
Right. There are some ways that some schools have worked this, either by bringing in some upper grade young people, pretty fast learners, good readers themselves, and having them help. The problem is the time, and you just need more time with them. And so that's what you're going to have to do, is try to enlist the help of some retired teachers, perhaps, in your church, older people in your church, who, with instruction and guidance, could do what you're needing to be. Now, you could even perhaps put them with a slower group. You had someone, especially a retired teacher, and switch off, have them work with the slower group while you spent, that was doing remedial work. It was pretty cut and dried, perhaps, while you were spending more time with this middle group, or having some work with the upper group. You might find that you might not meet with the upper group every day. That would be a possibility. But I would say off the top of my head, the best thing would be to just really pray that the Lord would send some able-bodied people, whether it be upper grade students, I hesitate to say the school secretary, although that is, and the principal, sometimes that has helped. But you really do need some help. And I don't anticipate it would be all year. I think that once you got these students going, you wouldn't have to have this help all year. It would be the beginning of the year would be the big time. Do you have access to books of high interest and a lower reading level? Mm-hmm. That might be a possibility, because I will check to see if they have that. I'm sort of dubious, but sometimes the motivation, if the child becomes more motivated, then you're going to find that will solve the problem. Anyone have a list of high interest, low reading? One thing we do have available, and you could check with up at the table, you could check with the people there. We have a reading list by grade. And you could just go down and try to pick the titles. It's annotated.
Is that one from the curriculum?
No, it's not from the curriculum. It was published by our librarian. I would check at the table in the lobby. Yeah. The table in the lobby as you walk in the door here. Okay. Yeah. We're going to have prayer and close, and then you can stay and I'll answer questions, okay? Our Father, we thank you for this time together. I pray, Lord, that you would be with these participants now as they finish up this day. I pray, Lord, that you would continue to bless them and help them to be a blessing to each other. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.